You're tuned to Focus on Campus, a weekly show which highlights faculty, staff, and students here at the University of Texas at El Paso. Good morning. I'm Louis Sines, your host for Focus on Campus, and joining us today are Liz Walsh and Scott Cutler. Liz is a professor of biological sciences here on campus, and Scott is the curator for the Centennial Museum. And they're here to talk about it, and it's No Bones About It, and it's a very interesting thing that's going to be taking place on behalf of the biology department and also the museum. So Liz and Scott, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thanks, Louie.
Thank you,
Now,
Louie.
First of all, when I said no bones about it, hopefully that attracted listeners' ears.
Okay, well, my research focuses on invertebrates, and these are animals that don't have spines like we have. Vertebrate animals have a vertebral column that provides skeletal support. So invertebrates don't have the traditional kind of skeleton that most people think about when we think of a skeleton. Instead, their skeleton is made of all kinds of other compounds and structures, not always just calcium carbonate and phosphate like our bones, but they could be made of chitin or other kinds of materials. And these animals, although they don't have bones, the exhibit is featuring their jaws. Okay. So a lot of invertebrates are very voracious predators too, and they have jaws that are very different from the jaws of most vertebrates.
When one thinks of jaws, they think of teeth, bone. These animals, what kind of jaws do they have?
Oh, they have a tremendous complexity of jaws and different jaw types. You've got to remember that when we're talking about invertebrates, we're talking about 39 different phyla of organisms. And of those different phyla, I mean, that's a huge grouping. It's not, you know, a species or something like that. It's just to give you some context, the vertebrates, which we belong to, is a subphylum of one phylum, right? So there's 39 different phyla, so much diversity of invertebrates that a lot of them have very different types of structures that function the same way that vertebrate jaws function. So when we think about vertebrate jaws, we think of bones and teeth, like you said, but these invertebrates use sometimes structures made out of keratin or chitin, which would be similar to the shell of an insect. Other ones
like
do
your
have,
fingernail.
Or, your
like
fingernail.
Your fingernail.
Yeah. And other ones have structures that are more similar to bone. They have calcium carbonate parts, but they don't have the same evolutionary history like all the jaws in vertebrates have. They're all of the jaws of vertebrates, like birds, mammals, reptiles, amphibians, fishes, all of their jaws come from a common ancestor. So they all have sort of the same kind of structure. You know, you think of the upper jaw and the lower jaw and the teeth and how they work together. But in invertebrates, they have different evolutionary origins, these structures that function to eat prey items and to eat food, just like our jaws do.
We're visiting with Dr. Liz Walsh. Dr. Walsh is a professor of biology here on campus. And also joining us today is Scott Cutler. And Scott is the curator for the Centennial Museum. And we're talking about the upcoming exhibit, No Bones About It. Now, Scott, Liz was talking a little bit about describing invertebrates. So you want to tell us a little bit about, you know, after what she mentioned, people might be wondering, well, if I go see this exhibit, what am I going to be looking at?
Well, there's a whole lot of display material that we have, a lot of photographs that will show micrographs, these scanning electron micrographs that enlarge these really minute structures that Liz and her coworkers have taken out of individual specimens and then subjected to these scanning electron microscopes, which allow them to produce a picture that we can enlarge so that we're able to see with our naked eye these really beautiful structures. And I had never seen these until Liz brought them in for the exhibit, but they're really magical looking, something from like a fairy tale or a science fiction. So I think people will be very surprised to see the photographs, but we also are trying to create some hands-on material for people to utilize to kind of understand and play with the concepts of these invertebrate jaws.
For this exhibit, you're saying hands-on, so I would imagine this is some great opportunities for parents and children to learn together.
That's what we're hoping. The families will come and really take advantage of this. We're going to have a series of puzzles that people can put together and sort of see the jaws come together in their before them as they're assembling the puzzle. We also are going to have some 3D printed models of the jaws that people will be able to hold in their hands and look at. Some of these we're hoping will be actual functional jaws where they'll be hinged together and people will be able to see how they operate. We also plan to have some microscopes out for people to look at prepared slides of some of these animals so that they can, you know, adjust them in the scope themselves and sort of bring them into focus and see them up close as a researcher would actually look at them in the lab, studying them.
Now, Liz, as I mentioned, this is part of your research going on here, and they wanted to see some of these creatures. What would they type in or what would they Google?
Well, they could just Google invertebrate jaws, and they would look under Google Images, and all kinds of interesting and fascinating jaws would appear, everything from the beak-like jaw of a squid. You know, squids have very powerful jaws that they use to capture their prey along with their tentacles that bring it to their mouth, and they have jaws that rip it apart. They could also look up little tiny microscopic jaws like Scott was talking about. The animals that I study are part of the aquatic food web called rotifers. They're very small, tiny animals. The largest one is 4 millimeters, which is, let's see, about the half of a the size of your fingernail, yeah. The white part of your fingernail. So they're very tiny animals, but even they have very complex and intricate jaws that have many different elements that help the animal crush and masticate the food that they eat, which is like algae and little unicellular fungi, or even some of them are predatory and eat other rotifers. So they'll find all kinds of information. And if you go onto YouTube, if you just type in rotifer jaws, you'll probably see a video of one of these jaws functioning.
One of the things that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that this study that you're doing is in conjunction with University of Massachusetts Lowell?
Yes, and also Ripon College in Wisconsin. So the three of us, myself and Robert Wallace from Ripon College and Rick Hochberg from the University of Massachusetts Lowell, have a collaborative National Science Foundation grant to study the evolution of these group of microinvertebrates called rotifers. And as part of the National Science Foundation grant, we do some public outreach. And so the museum exhibit is one of the activities that we do to try to engage the public in science research and to see how fascinating and intricate some aspects of science that people would never think about in their life can actually be, and try to stimulate the public to take a closer look at science and to get the kids interested in science, of course, for their career. So it's the three of us work together on this grant to understand the evolution of these animals. And one of the key features in identifying rotifers is the structure of their jaws, which are called trophy, actually. So as part of our research every day, we have to look at the trophy of these animals and try to use that to help identify what species we're looking at, because each species will have different little tiny differences in the structure of their jaws.
Scott, as the curator, tell us a little bit about your job, and then particularly for this exhibit, do you have to decide what goes where, or how to, depends on the marketplace or your target audience, I guess, as far as how you're going to set this up?
Well, when we design exhibits for the museum, when we're working with people like Liz, they are the content experts. And so we talk with them, sort of get an idea of what they want to present and bounce ideas off of them about how the information can be presented and try to create engaging methods that we think will attract the public and get them excited about what they're looking at. So that's what we've done in this exhibit, is actually worked with Liz, and she has worked with some of her colleagues to assemble the basic information that they want to present. And so we block off the space that we have for the exhibit and sort of say, well, we'll put this part of the exhibit in here where we're talking about the evolution of the invertebrate jaws. We'll talk in this section about the variety of invertebrate jaws that you can see in the world. You know, we're not just talking about rotifers either, but a lot of insects and things that people would come in contact with in their daily lives. So we'll block it off and say, we've got this much space, and these are the things that we want to talk about. And so then we'll try to find the most engaging images and try to work up the text in a way that we think will be very exciting for the visitors. And we think we've done a pretty good job with it on this one. There's some really fun things.
And then, of course, Scott helps put the language into context for the public, because sometimes as a scientist, we get caught up in some complex terminology that most people in the public probably don't want to learn. So Scott's been a tremendous help in making the exhibit palatable to the public and helping us put it into the right perspective. So like you said, that people will be engaged and not be thinking they're going to a science lecture.
Yeah, and it's not a matter of avoiding the jargon of a specific research area, but it's taking that the language that they use and trying to create a way that people with typical language, the daily language, would be able to understand those things. So it's kind of creating a dictionary in a way where you present these terms and then you put them in more general popular terms for people to understand.
What is something that perhaps, if they want to do a little bit of research before they come or want to, enjoy their trip more, what should they do?
Well, I think Liz's suggestion about going to the internet would be a good way to do it and look up invertebrate jaws. There are thousands and thousands of photographs that highlight the variety of it. There are websites that talk about it. There are even videos of researchers that have posted things about their research online. So people have a really great resource with the internet to be able to prepare themselves for this exhibit or to follow up afterwards and find out new things. And a lot of times that's what's so good about exhibits, is that it opens your eyes to things you never would have thought of before, concepts that you can then go and look on the internet and find out more about.
Liz, as far as jaws can be a little bit kind of misleading, because when you think of jaws, you think automatically about the shark and Peter Benchley. But as you mentioned earlier, and so did Scott, the invertebrates are not just specific to the ocean or the coast. You can find them just about anywhere, correct?
Yes, correct. And like Scott said, too, we will have one of the panels does feature desert invertebrates. And so we have some images there that kids might see the animal outside someplace in the desert, and we'll have some images of their jaws. And we hope that we'll have some of the animals there as well.
Now, what about the website so people can find out more about either Liz's project or the exhibit in general? The museum have a specific website for this, Scott?
If they go to our website, utep.edu/museum, I believe, and then within that, look for exhibits, upcoming exhibits, and then they'll find the information about the exhibit. I did want to, before we close, just mention that the exhibit will run from June 13th through September 19th, and it's called Invertebrate Jaws, No Bones About Them. And if you have questions, if the public has questions, they can call the museum at 747-5565, and we can give them some more information about where to park or the hours of the museum, which are Tuesday through Saturday from 10 to 4:30. So there's lots of opportunities for people to find out more about the exhibit and when it's open and all of that if they don't remember.
Well, thank you very much for being with us here today. We've been visiting with Professor Liz Walsh with Biology Department and Museum Curator Scott Cutler talking about the exhibit that's going on right now at the Centennial Museum. If you have additional questions, you're asked to call 747-5565. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Louie.
Focus on Campus is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Belinda Fernandez. You've been tuned to Focus on Campus. I'm Louis Sainz.